بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. A man was on the throes of death, so he thought the right thing to do is to make a bequest for my son as to what he should be doing after my death. So he advised him see, this palace that I have left, I have built for you, for your comfort, for your ease, and for your benefit. But there is some odd looking shrub on the corner of the house. Don't interfere with that. The garden is too beautiful, the trees, the roses, the plants, the flowers, the arrangement is too exciting. This thing looks a little bit odd in this whole works. This thing looks a little bit odd. But if you know what's good for you, just leave that. Don't ever interfere with that. Anyway, the father passed away, and not long after that, the son felt that this is really causing a headache. It's a headache. It's such an ugly thing. Shrub is spoiling the whole ambience, spoiling the whole thing. Let's get rid of it. So he got rid of it. And in the next moment, he sees the snakes coming in, the pythons coming in, the scorpions coming in, and all are posing a danger for himself. Many a times, we do not know the relationship of the obligation and the good that comes with it. Allah Ta'ala's promise is, إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ تَنْهَى عَنِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ. Namaz, by its very nature, it prevents, it restrains you, it guards you against indecency and evil works. But the relationship between namaz and indecency, the relationship between namaz and evil work, you cannot see it. Can you see it? You can't see it. Read namaz and you'll get this. So what's the relationship? We can't understand it. We can't comprehend. The fortune of man is just to listen. We call ourselves Muslims. And then Islam is at three different levels. One is at the behavior. Surrender in our behavior, in our conduct. We heard the command of Allah Ta'ala and we just gave in. We relented, we gave in, we submitted, we surrendered. Then at the second level, on the tongue, we give in on the tongue as well. And at the third level, the heart and the mind also gives in. I just give in. It's the command of Allah Ta'ala and I give in. So there must be something in this submission for Allah Ta'ala to command the greatest anbiya of time. Ibrahim al-Islam is amongst the greatest anbiya of the times. And Allah Ta'ala commands him to surrender, to submit. And without questioning, without understanding the whole works, Ibrahim al-Islam just gives in. إِذْ قَالَ لَهُ رَبُّهُ أَسْلِمْ. So just give in, surrender, submit, give yourself up. Now the Anbiya alayhi salam are the most intelligent of the time. And when they are the most intelligent, in other words, they know the most about this life and the next. And when they giving themselves up, then it says a lot for us. It says a lot to us. You see, this is the way. Just give up. Just give in to Allah Ta'ala. He said it, let it be. And let it be happily. Let it be not grudgingly. No, I have to do this now. I have to get out of Fajr now. I can't even listen to music. I can't even look here. I don't have the freedom of my eyes. Allah Ta'ala said it, let it be. Don't question it. Don't ask. You believe in Him as your creator. He has designed your entire life and itinerary. So when He's instructed, then just let it be. Then don't question it. That's love. Love requires that when the beloved is commanding, then you just give in. It's not a good example to quote. Someone is really mad, right, in love. And the beloved tells him that as a mark, as a proof of your love, on each day, you know, around the Eidgah, you must walk just a boxer shorts, nothing else. And the next day I'll confirm my love for you. A man is deep and he's mad, he will do that as well. I mentioned this in one bayan. An old man was sitting there, very experienced. Mullah, you said something very mild. If you told the person to go naked, he'll do that as well. He won't hesitate. When he's really mad, he's at the level of ecstasy, at the level of obsession, he can't contain his love. He's prepared to do this as well. So on the one end, we say we love Allah Ta'ala. So is our love for Allah Ta'ala like the love you see on the t-shirts of children? I love my father, I love my grandfather. Is our love at that level? Or is our love beyond and beyond? So when he's asked you, when he's commanded you, then love requires that you don't ask. Why, when, how, who, what time? Don't ask these things. Just give in. And then you taste love. When you don't ask, then you taste love. But when you ask, then you spoil the whole thing. See? Then it's not real love. When you ask 101 questions, then you've spoiled the whole thing. See? Your wife is telling you that I need this type of roses. Why, when, how, do you need it? Should I do it? You think it's necessary? You think it's really important now to get that? You know, after 3-4 days, I think we'll just shrink and throw it away. Do you think I need to waste that money? Do you call that love? They say, no, bhai. You want that love? Do you want this? And you know, when you talk about the price, you know, that shop, that floor has got the best. I will get that. You know, as a token of my love, I will do that. But now, what's the relationship between the rose and love? Nobody knows about it. You know that thing is going to shrink, it's going to fade away, it's going to die, khalas. But to endorse your love, you'll just do it. So when you have claimed your love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you don't ask questions. But genuinely there is a relationship. There is a relationship in the command and the consequence that follow. In the command and the consequence that follow. Allah ta'ala speaks about namaz. The consequence, it will stop you from all wrong. But then let the namaz be namaz then. People generally complain about concentration. We don't have the concentration. Simple thing, a very, very simple way to get that concentration. As more time is recommends. Just concentrate on the wordings that you are reciting. Like a person who doesn't know his Quran Sharif very well. Right? He's got the whole picture before him. That this ruku starts here at the beginning of the page. And it ends up on the next page halfway. Right? He's picturing the whole thing and he's reading Tarawi. Generally, if he's got a picture, then he doesn't go off. His mind is focused. Hey, I know I need to make the ruku here. I need to make the sajda here. And the second rakat, I'll start off from this point. His mind is just engaged on that ayah that he's reciting. He says, for people like us, that's quite sufficient. The namaz to bring about that concentration and khushu, for people like us, this is quite sufficient. That we're just concentrating on the wordings of the Quran, the wordings of Allah Ta'ala. Reading Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. So your mind is on Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Just concentrate on that. That is quite sufficient. Even though your mind cannot go towards the meaning so quickly. It's two situations. One is your language. when it's your language that you are speaking, then your mind goes straight to the meaning. But if it's a different language, then first your mind goes towards the wording, and thereafter you work out the meaning. So it will take you some time. Now you're going to worry too much about the meaning, then just now you'll get confused. So you just concentrate on the wording. Imam Sahib is saying Allahu Akbar, so your mind is on that. It's a silent namaz, then recite the Surah Fatiha in your mind. Right? Shafis, they can recite it, but Hanafis, they can't recite Surah Fatiha, or they can't recite anything whilst the Imam is in Qiraat. Qiraat or Surah Fatiha, you can't recite. But now you need to get the concentration. To get the completion and the perfection of your namaz, you need to get the concentration. Is there any price for the honey that doesn't have any sweetness? Cold ring and no sweetness. So it doesn't get the price. It doesn't get the price. The coke, pull out the sweetness out of it, you're going to sell. You're not going to sell that thing. So similar is that namaz without concentration. And the simple concentration that we can bring about very easily is just concentrate on the words. Concentrate on the words. So what I was getting at is, many a times, many situations, we don't understand the command and the consequence. But then we remind ourselves that we are Muslims. We don't need to understand consequence. We need to understand the command. Allah didn't make this as an obligation that you need to know the consequence. Yes, the obligation was to continue. You must carry on. Execute my command. That was not the command. That was not the command that you must understand the whole thing. What is going to be the consequence? What's the wisdom? What's the philosophy behind it? That he didn't ask you to involve yourself and stress about the whole thing. Whereas there is wisdom. It's not that there isn't wisdom. You look at theft, right? And then amputating of the hand, right? Now, outwardly it seems barbaric. You see, barbaric and so aggressive. Islam is such a harsh and such a barbaric religion, right? This is what they will say. But now, failure to keep and conform with the command of Allah Ta'ala, what it results in? It results in every home having to be burglar guarded. You have a patrol, you have a satellite, then you have CCTV, then you have a police, then you have to have a guard and security over the police station. We need so many levels of security. Why? Because you said, now this is barbaric, we don't need to have it. Then your life is still in danger, right? Then maybe someone had murdered your brother or something, it was your partner in your business. And then because of the labor law, you still have to keep the person as a staff in your shop. Now, do you understand how complicated this thing becomes? How complicated? And the Islamic law was that you amputate that person's hand. And وَلْيَشْهَدْ أَذَابَهُمَا طَائِفَةٌ مِّنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ لَا تَأْخُذْكُمْ بِهِمَا رَأْفَةٌ فِي دِينِ اللَّهِ إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. In executing the law of Allah Ta'ala, you don't allow yourself to be consumed by compassion and kindness. It's a law of Allah Ta'ala, let it be. Don't you allow yourself to be consumed by compassion, by kindness. He has created kindness, so He is commanding. So you are trying to act kinder than Allah Ta'ala, more compassionate than Him. Where's your brains? He has created compassion, He knows the standards of compassion and kindness, and He is instructing you that this is what you're going to do. And you say, no, kindness, kindness. Alright, be kind. Then what's going to happen? Your life is not secure. Your children's life is not secure. Your shop is not secure. Your home is not secure. Nothing is secure. And the final consequence of this whole thing is that the thief, the robber, the one that will burglar your house, he'll be walking very freely around. He'll be roaming the streets, going wherever he wants to go. Free, he's got no problems. And the people that are law-abiding, they'll have to live in burglar guards within their homes. The law-abiding servant, he will have to be inside his home, and this person that is breaking the law, he can go free about doing anything what he wants. So there is a relationship, but we don't understand the relationship. Now, when in an Islamic country, in an Islamic state, that law is being executed, one person's hand is cut off and severed, right?
Now the whole world is seeing it. وَلْيَشْهَدْ أَذَابَهُمَا طَائِفَةٌ مِّنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. The whole world is going to see it. People are going to witness it. They're going to talk about it. They're going to see him. Hey, his hand is cut off. Why was his hand cut off? He's an embarrassment for himself, for his whole community, for his family. Well, this man got, he stole here and he did this, so his hand got cut off. So it's such a big deterrent. One person, and as a result of executing the law of Allah Ta'ala in one person, millions of people are living relaxed. Saudi Arabia, you will not say that it is a purely Islamic country. But the little Islam that they are practicing, they can still leave their shops three quarter open, jewelry shop, gold and silver and diamond, whatever. They can leave the shop, go for namaz, coming after 1 hour, and they're still totally, mentally, physically relaxed. What is it? That little bit of Islamic law that they are practicing makes them so relaxed and comfortable. Then you look at zina, right? Fornication. Same, now look at the relationship. You want to see the philosophy, you want to see what is it. But the maja and the enjoyment is to listen to Allah Ta'ala, don't ask. Now you brought that flower, you brought the rose and all that, after asking 50 questions, why, when, how, spend the money, but it's a waste of time. And you bought it eventually. So she says, alright, grudgingly you brought it, no, never mind. So she's not appreciative, she's not happy. But there, she instructed, and there, before she could even say roses, before that S, you brought it in. Before she could say that S, and you got it in. Now what delight, what enjoyment. Hey, my husband is like this. He really loves me. He'll do the world for me. See the love. This is what love requires. Allah Pak said it, we do it. So these people, they are teaching us the story of love. Prime Islam is saying, I want to be so deep in love. Oh Allah Ta'ala, Rabbana waj'alna muslimaini laka. Allah Pak, I want to be really deep in love. Give myself completely, in spite of him being the highest of the times. But what he's asking for a deeper level. For a deeper level. Not to stop at any point. Majnun's father, say this man is Majnun now. Majnun was really a professor. Don't think that he was an ordinary person. But he got entangled in the love triangle. Right? He got entangled. The king of the time, when he heard about this whole story, he summoned Layla, the beloved. He summoned the beloved. He got Majnun on one side, he got the beloved Layla. He saw, he just turned his eyes. Hey, don't waste your time, don't kid around. It's not something that you could give your life for. So his reply was, to appreciate Layla, you need the eyes of Majnun. You don't have my eyes. You see like how you want to see. You need to have the eyes of Majnun to appreciate my Layla. So his father saw this and his father couldn't see this going on. This man is losing, he's losing badly. I need to do something about my son. So he took him for Hajj. Get him for Hajj now, he's in drugs now, get him for Hajj, get him, drink the Zamzam, you know, he'll come right. With everything, we look for shortcut. Someone got sick, the shortcut is, you know, Tawiz, must give Tawiz, and he's got Jadu. So the shortcut. Rather, doing both, do the medication also, and you feel that it is something, Jadu, etc. Also do that. But now, you put all your mind to Jadu. Meanwhile, the person has been eaten with cancer. And at the final stage, then you want to do the treatment. So do the both. So anyway, he brought him right to the Kaaba Sharif. He says, now make dua. Hold the gilaf of the multazam and make dua. Rabbi, tubtu min kullil maasi. Allah Ta'ala, I ask for forgiveness for all my gunas. So he says, Allah Ta'ala, I ask for guna. I ask for maafi for all my guna. Rabbi, tubtu min kullil maasi, min kulli maasi. All my gunas. Walakin hubbu layla la atubu. But this love for Layla is not negotiable. That's leave it aside. That I want to increase. You see, Mahabbat itself has got an enjoyment. Love itself has got an enjoyment.
Now, we are asking for love. We desire love. But why don't we turn towards the creator of love? Just that little bit, that minuscule love that he has sent down to this world, wicked man. A minuscule love, minuscule percentage. Now, he is the creator of love. He is the giver of love. He is the bestower of love. What love, what levels of love will he have? That little bit made our minds boggle. Little bit of love. And our minds were all upside down. If the real love has to come, then what will happen to us? And that is his favor also, that he's just left it at that level. Our minds couldn't have handled it. Al-Hari Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, in the Haram Sharif, used to have the Dars of Masnavi. Masnavi Sharif. And after the Dars, after the Sabak was over, he should make dua. Once he made this dua, Allah Ta'ala, aapki zaat ki zarra barabar muhabbat naseeb ata farma. Allah Ta'ala, just a mustard seed, just a minuscule of your love, we need, Allah Ta'ala. We beg you for it. And after the dua was ended, Alhamdulillah, dua qubool hui. Or bandon ko usse zyada ki bardasht bhi nahi. We asked for a mustard seed, and reality is this, that people cannot endure more than that. This is too much for them. What we asked was really too much. But this is the level that you can endure. You can't endure anything beyond that. So we talk about zina and the punishment that follows, right? So Islam has laid so many barriers for zina. So much of barriers. Lower your gaze. Right? You lower your gaze. And don't even fantasize. See, the Quran Sharif says, Ya alamu kha'inatal ayun wa ma tukhfi sudur. The deception of the eye, that I know, right? It's something good, something beautiful, whether it's a young boy or a girl, then I want to be near and I want to be close. I want to be somewhere near, right? So I can take a glimpse somehow. She must just phone or something. So what Allah Pak is saying, وَمَا تُخْفِ السُّدُورِ. Even what the hearts conceal, Allah Pak knows about that. In the school days, you know, and the pencil and the rubbers were being passed, and the assignment books were being exchanged, one thing just got stuck up in the memory. One girl just got stuck up in the memory. Now and then she just features again and again. She just features. So وَمَا تُخْفِ السُّدُورِ. What the hearts conceal, Allah Pak knows about that as well. Don't you think you're getting away? What's stored up in the phone is insignificant. What's in the mind, nobody can pick up. Can anybody pick up? Nobody can pick up that. In the phone, they can break the code and they can pull it out. Or this is what you've been doing, right? They can do something. But what's stored up in the mind, can anybody pick it up? So Allah Pak is saying, وَمَا تُخْفِي الصُّدُورِ. What you're fantasizing, Allah Pak knows about that as well. You're in the marriage, but you're fantasizing about some other girl, some other woman. You wanted her to be in your marriage, but for some reason she couldn't be in your marriage. But you go on and on and on fantasizing about her. وَمَا تُخْفِي الصُّدُورِ. I know about it. Allah Pak is saying, I know about it. Don't you think you'll get away? وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْلَمُ مَا فِي أَنفُسِكُمْ. What's within your heart, Allah Pak knows about it. You know, when you study the law of Allah Ta'ala, really it's beauty upon beauty upon beauty. Just that, you look at it from different angles, you'll understand that beauty. Now just look at this, وَمَا تُخْفِي الصُّدُورِ, right? Look at the beauty of it. Look at the beauty of it. Say, for example, you are making love, right, with your family. And she is at that time fantasizing about someone else. And you discover that. Will there be an iota of love left? It's gone, finished. So what's so great about you that you can fantasize and she can't fantasize? If you can't, if she can't, then you can't as well. Why do you consider yourself something superior? Now I'm privileged, I can do this, and she mustn't do this. Why do you consider yourself like that? It's a man's problem. Man feels it's a man's world. And then unfortunately, women also begin to say it's a man's world. A man can commit 101 wrongs, right?
can be running around with 101 women, right? And he can still get into a marriage, no problem. He is pure as crystal. It's a little bit of, just a little bit of a rush, you can just brush it off. Right? He feels it like that. What he feels, it's a little bit of rush, you can just brush it off, become clear crystal. You can make into pure silver. Right? But a woman, you say, no. If something went into her, it's like that veg that's decaying. You can't return, take it out of the decay. It's decaying, class. So unfortunately, this is how we look at her. And we think too much of ourselves, no. Anything and any wrong that can be wiped off from me. But her, it can't be wiped off. So what makes you so great that you feel yourself to be something greater than that woman? In the sight of Allah Ta'ala, both of you are identical. This is how people view you. That if you do a wrong, alright, it's pardonable. But what she does is unpardonable. So therefore, society will look at the woman differently. One time she's committed wrong, they struck her off the list. Class is gone. So, يَعْلَمُ خَائِنَةَ الْأَعْيُنُ وَمَا تُخْفِي الصُّدُورُ. You see the barriers that Islam has set on. Then Islam says, not only the eyes, not only the heart, even the ears, لَا تَخْضَعْنَ فِي الْقَوْلِ وَلَا يَدْرِبْنَ بِأَرْجُلِهِنَّ لِيُعْلَمَ مَا يُخْفِينَ مِنْ زِينَتِهِنَّ. So, when you are talking to them, and you have to talk, whether telephonic, whether any other way, you make sure that you're not taking any type of lust. You don't want that conversation to continue. Many times it's a habit of women. How are you, Mulana? So the answer must be, yes, what do you wish to say? Not, Alhamdulillah, and how are you? No, that's not the right way. That's not the protocol. Protocol is, yes, what do you want? Straight, come to the topic. So you get her in line. But the moment you get into a casual conversation, then things go wrong after that. One thing leads to the other. So you don't go off the course. I was explaining one person. He says, no, I came across one kitab, the last word in the kitab read, that just zikr is not sufficient. Wasting your time, you're just being Allah, Allah. You're wasting time. If you're not guided. So I said, I didn't see the kitab, and I need to see the kitab to understand the context. Right? But a simple explanation I can give you, for you to understand. Say you are working in a business, right? Right. And the director, the boss, has given you a certain job. That you are going to manage this whole department. It's cosmetics, you're going to be managing the whole thing. Now, you left your department and you're washing the toilets and you're scrubbing the floors and all that, right? What will the manager say? What will the director say? You're doing your job or not? You're working or not? Will he say you're working? He say you're not working. But I'm working, don't you see? I'm scrubbing the floors, I'm cleaning, I'm working. But what will you say? You're not working. So work will, you will define work as that work or that action that will please the boss. Simple words, it will please the boss. Whatever you are doing, the boss is feeling happy about you. You are setting it up, you are re-presenting the whole thing, you're repackaging the whole thing, you're talking to the customer, right, you're trying to push the product. So whatever you're doing in that respect, the boss is going to be pleased with you. So zikr will mean that this whole universe is the business, is the shop of Allah Ta'ala. What? This whole universe is the factory of Allah Ta'ala, is the shop of Allah Ta'ala, is the mall of Allah Ta'ala. Right. In this mall, then at any given time, your behavior, your action must be such that it is pleasing to Allah Ta'ala. Like their work was defined as that piece of work that is pleasing to the boss. At any given time, you are doing whatever you are doing, but it's pleasing to the boss. So you call, no, he's working. He's diligent. He's working. Right? And if you're not doing that which is pleasing to the boss, say, he's not working, this person. I don't need this person. He's not working.
So exactly the same, zikr here will mean that at any given time, your behavior, your action, verbal, mental, physical, whichever way, but it's pleasing to Allah Ta'ala. Is this pleasing to Allah Ta'ala or not? Man is applying atdar, he's bathing. He's bathing, he's applying atdar, he's applying oil to his hair, he's combing his hair, he's looking nice. But he's in zikr, because his mind is like this, Allah Pak would be happy. I'm going for namaz, I'll comb my beard nicely, I'll trim it nicely, take my mustache out, I'll put on some attar so nobody feels offended. I'll park my car correctly, nobody will be troubled, nobody will be interrupted. So all the time, the man's mind is in Allah Ta'ala. Though verbally he's not doing zikr. He doesn't have formally a tasbih. But really what he is in zikr. Because his mind is consumed in Allah Pak. At any given time, is Allah Pak pleased with me or not? So you see what zikr means. At any given time, you are thinking now. Your heart is deeply in contact, connection with Allah Ta'ala. Is Allah Ta'ala pleased with me or not? So you see at the third level, that even ears, you're not taking any lust, no lust. You're not fantasizing of some old memories, you're not fantasizing. I sometimes mention this, when you say fantasize, recalling old memories, on old chacha, yeah, bikurta and all that, nice beard, the Juma, and after the Juma, he says, Imara, that person's cell phone just went off, you know, and, you know, the tone just took me to the 50s. That song just took you to the 50s. By asking, by Chacha, you coming to the masjid once a week at least, as it is. And where's your mind? In Allah Pak or in the 50s? What you are doing there in the 50s? What your mind is up to? You see, the lust, Allah Pak knows about that as well. Don't think you'll get away. Allah Pak knows about that as well. The sin of the heart. Really, sometimes we don't pay attention to it, but it's a serious matter. It was perhaps Shibli or Bayezid Bustami, rahmatullah alayh. He saw a person begging at the entrance of the masjid. Healthy, nice looking, well, plump, strong. So, he got upset. We didn't tell him anything, but what's wrong? The man is healthy, strong. Why isn't he working? Why is he becoming a liability to society? He must do something for a living. In his dream, he sees someone saying that you eat of this flesh of the dead. There's a dead brother's corpse, you eat from that. So no, but it's a dead corpse. So, but you've been doing this. I didn't engage in any ghibat. So no, you mentally, you are making ghibat about that brother of yours. Within your mind, you're making ghibat of that person. Anyway, you got a shock. So see, I need to ask that person maaf. So he got up in the morning after Fajr, he's looking for the person. Yeah, that side, this side, eventually caught up with him. So that person, as he sees Bayezid rahmatullahi or Shibli rahmatullahi, he says, وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْلَمُ مَا فِي أَنفُسِكُمْ فَحَذَرُوا. Allah Pak knows what's within the heart. So be careful about that. Don't think you're looking after your eyes, your tongue and your ears is sufficient. He knows what's within the heart as well. And then when Bayezid rahmatullahi had to ask for maaf or something, so he says, وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ حَلِيمٌ. That if you are really remorseful, Allah Ta'ala will also forgive. You don't have to be despondent. You are remorseful, you are regretful of what has happened. It's happened by accident, mistake. So Allah Ta'ala is forgiving. So Allah Ta'ala has created these barriers. See these barriers. Eyes, ears, tongue, limbs. Now if someone has broken all those barriers, someone has broken all those barriers, then the Sharia is saying, if he's an unmarried person, then flog him with 100 stripes. And if he's a married person, then stone him to death. Again, لا تأخذكم بهما رأفة في دين الله. In executing the command of Allah Ta'ala, don't allow yourself to be overtaken by compassion, by kindness. Don't allow that. And let the Muslims witness this. They must witness it. Now this person is stoned to death. The whole Muslim must see it. All Muslims must see, let them see it. The whole world is seeing it. Now when the world is seeing it, what is the cash advantage? I'm showing you the cash benefit. The cash benefit is,
You won't have rape. Now look, in most Western countries, you know, the statistics shows in most advanced Western countries that every hour there is a rape. In every 3 hours there is an incest that is carrying on. Approximately every 4 hours there is an abuse, child abuse carrying on. And apart from all that, there's so much loads and loads and loads of marital problems. So where does this come from? The simple answer is, you see, when you're going to see roast and kebabs and braai, then your dar diwar that you got at home, will you have qadar for that? Would you have qadar for that? All the qadar will be lost now. Hey, I'm seeing roast here, kebabs here, and braai. And now this dar masoor, I can't give too much of attention to this. So you lost your wife. Why? Because of seeing all these type of things. All this type of illicit, wrong, porn, right? You saw all that, your mind got consumed, got taken away. Who was giving you that respect, who was giving you that type of service and that type of comfort, you forgot her. For that haram, you see. So لا تأخذكم به ما رأفتن. Don't you allow yourself to be overtaken with compassion. So nobody's respect is left. Nobody's integrity is left. And challenges. Forget non-Muslims, even Muslims. They challenge in the university, they challenge, let any parda girl come to us. And we'll see, in 3 months, we'll do everything. Last thing. There's a challenge that Muslim boys are giving. I'm telling you first hand what they say. First hand what they are saying, that let any girl come from the brightest and the most pious background. In 3 months, we'll put her in a place. We'll do everything to her. That's a challenge that they give. That this is now where you have deposited your innocent girl. Your innocent daughter, you have brought her here. And you have brought her to a pack of wolves. You have brought her and you have thrown her into a pack of wolves. And you think, the pack of wolves won't do anything to her. She's so secure, she's so parked, nothing will happen. Like saying, you know, that on a hot day, very, very hot day, right, you're in Roza, it's very hot, and someone is cutting a lemon before you, and you must say, now don't allow your mouth to water. Is it possible? Not possible. Or taking a hard piece of butter, leaving it on the stove, and saying, don't melt. Does it happen? You're asking for the impossible. It's going to happen. There's no two ways. So Allah has put all these barriers. Now when there's all these barriers, now Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is saying that a woman will travel from this point to that point, 300-400 kilometers. She's not afraid of anything. Why? All these barriers are there. All this protection, all these fortresses of parda, of self-respect are in place. So a woman can walk and travel all by herself for some needs, pressing needs, she has to travel. But she's not afraid of anything. Now tell me, in any Western society, if a beautiful woman, age of 18, 19, and she has to walk at about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, what happens to her? Can she walk safely? Any woman for that matter. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. In the most advanced, most westernized, the best of communities, can she walk safely? Nobody can walk safely. You see, you took out that Islamic law, you took out Allah's law, and you try to replace it with the law of man. Man-made is man-made. Allah's made is Allah's made. Soya meat is soya meat. And real meat is real meat. Soya milk is soya milk. And real milk is real milk. So you can't replace, you can't substitute Allah Ta'ala's. Anyway, this was Surah Nur that we started off. I'm just giving you some introduction. Umar radiallahu anhu says, that teach your woman Surah Nur. What? Teach your woman Surah Nur. Umar radiallahu anhu had so much of insight, so much of intelligence. Alas, you know, if we could have just taken our time and read his statements, so beautiful, so much of wisdom. I mean, there must have been some reason why Nabi Sam had to say that if there was a Nabi after me, it would have been Umar. So he had insight, he had sight in him, he had vision in him. Amongst women, the person that had a lot of vision was Aisha radiallahu anha. Amongst men was Umar radiallahu anhu, and amongst women was Aisha. I don't think amongst the Sahaba women, there was anybody at that level. At that level, there was hardly anyone. She was gone. Far beyond. So she says that don't let your woman live in high-rise buildings. Number one. Right? Number two is, don't tease them to write. Don't tease them to write. The ulama will make an exception. What they will say? They will say, where you have a problem that she can fall into something indecent, immoral, then you mustn't teach her. Right? That's the explanation they'll give. Now, in that zamana, Aisha Rayan's zamana, how it was, that majority won't learn, and a few that are absolutely secure now, they will learn. Now the whole thing is reversed. The majority will learn, and there'll be some few women, and that few women have to be underprivileged. What? They have to be underprivileged to not to learn to write. Right? But now I ask you, be truthful to yourself. Is this SMS and all these things that are carrying on in technology, is it not a menace? And the menace, where is it started from? From writing or not? So you wrote, but what price? What price? You have lost your modesty, you have lost your shame. Everything is lost. Everything is lost. I tell you, when everything is lost, really everything is lost. Now to retrieve it is becoming like impossible. It's gone so bad. But Aisha, that sight, the woman that had a sight, she said, don't tease them writing. Don't tease them writing. And at least if you need to tease them writing, teach them writing of a language that is very, very difficult to communicate with everybody. Teach them Arabic or something. So they'll write now, they can only speak Fanagalo, they can't speak beyond that. So just the bare necessary they'll speak, not beyond that. So then, the third advice of Aisha, tease them Surah Nur. Aisha is saying the same thing, Umar is saying the same thing. And the fourth piece of advice, cotton weaving. So it will keep them occupied for the entire day. Now, when the punishment of fornication, immoral, indecent activity is so great, right? So to come to prove this also will be a difficult thing. It will not be so easy to go and prove someone guilty. The Quran, the Hadith will say, four male, adult, pious, Muslims who's got perfect, their personality is absolutely perfect. You can't point a finger against their integrity and respect. Such perfect male Muslim adults, they must say, and they must say it like they have seen it, you know, and they have seen it so precisely as though it's like a surma stick in a surma bottle. They have seen it like that. So tell me, can anybody imagine seeing it? So that's the law. That this can only be established either with confession, personal confession, an acknowledgement, or someone has witnessed it. But they witness it so clearly. If they haven't witnessed it so clearly, then this will not be counted as a crime. And if someone goes and he saw the crime, but he was just one solitary person, one individual, then too his witnessing and evidence will be turned down. And he will be lashed. He'll be punished. Why? Because you are a solitary person, you can't go and give evidence for that. You can't be a witness for that. You'll have to find four people that seen it like you have seen it, and then you give the evidence. Otherwise, your individual witness is not going to be accepted, it's going to be rejected. But that doesn't mean that there is carte blanche permission and wholesale permission for any type of indecent activity, no. If there's anything minor, then you can go and report it to the court. And say, I've seen some indecent activity amongst these people. The court will employ its discretion and they will punish the person. But you can't take it up to zina straight away. Say, no, I've seen them and they're behaving in an indecent manner. So that they will summon them and they will punish them accordingly. But now you see an Islamic pure community, how it lives. And you see the goodness, the beauty. Up till now you see, right? In Makkah Mukarramah with all its modernism, right? Or Madina Munawara, woman, at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, she's going out of the hotel, going for the tawaf, coming back all herself. Any part of the world, can you imagine that happening? Can't imagine. This is only the beauty of the sunnah. I can't attribute it to anything else. Just the beauty of the sunnah. She can walk all herself, come down, go to the haram, do a tawaf, or go to the Masjid al-Nabawi, do whatever she needs to do and come back. No problem, no fear. The husband is quite comfortable, she's quite comfortable, she's not worried. No harassment, no flirtation, nothing, absolute nothing. The beauty of the law of Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala's law is Allah Ta'ala's law, it can never be replaced. Now in the case of some type of a scandal, right, some rumor is being passed, what should be the response of the Muslim? You hear some scandal, you hear some type of a rumor, you hear some type of allegations going around. Now what should be the response? So the Quran Sharif is showing you what should be your response. Some news is coming about some individual, he did this, or he did this, or this girl did this, this woman, or this school, this is what happened. So what should be your response? Islam is complete, obviously. And news, etc., news, information, you can't avoid. But then what should be your response? So Islam shows three responses. One is, ظَنَّ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتُ بِأَنفُسِهِمْ خَيْرًا. You hear this, your response must be that you think good of your brother. Men or women, you think good of them. So what the Quran is telling you, that in order to consider your brother to be good, you don't need to have a proof. What is telling you? You need to have a proof now. ظَنَّ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتُ بِأَنفُسِهِمْ خَيْرًا. What is this verse showing? That in order to show that he is good, to think that he is good, you don't need to have any proof. If you thought that your brother was good, in the court of Allah Ta'ala, you will not be summoned for any crime and for any guilt. Though he must be a first-handed criminal. First-handed criminal he is. But you thought that he's a good person. It's not a guna against you. So that's the first thing. سَمِعْتُمُوا ظَنَّ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتُ بِأَنفُسِهِمْ خَيْرًا. Right. And you must say, no, this is an open lie. هَذَا إِفْكُمْ مُبِينٌ. It's an open lie. Allegation, false allegation. Second response. لَوْ لَا جَاءُوا عَلَيْهِ بِأَرْبَعَةِ شُهَدَى. If they make this allegation of fornication or adultery, then they must produce four male adult witnesses, Muslims. And if they can't prove it, فَأُولَٰئِكَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ هُمُ الْكَاذِبُونَ. For the rest of the life, you will be counted as a liar. When you are counted as a liar, then your witnesses, وَلَا يَقْبَلُوا لَهُمْ شَهَادَةً أَبَدًا. If you go and witness, your witness is turned down. Your evidence is turned down. For the rest of your life, you reject it. Apart from the punishment, you reject it. No, at any court, you can't go stand as a witness. So people see you, this person here, his witnesses are rejected. So you're living in community with that type of respect. They say, no, this person is mardud al-shahada. He's got no integrity, no respect. See. So that's the second response. The third response, قُلْتُمْ مَا يَكُونُ لَنَا أَن نَتَكَلَّمَ بِهَذَا. This is not right for us to speak about these things. سُبْحَانَكَ هَذَا بُهْتَانٌ عَظِيمٌ. Glory be to Allah Ta'ala. This is an open lie. It's an open false allegation. You see the response. When you hear this scandal, the scandal being published, broadcasted, then what should be your response? You say, no, it's a lie. My brother is not like that. This is supposed to be the mindset. You can't even think that he's like that. Deliberately, you can't even believe that he's like that. Yes, the rumors are flying around. But you don't have the permission to believe it. Forget speaking about it, you don't even have the permission to believe that. You believe in that, you're a liar already. Now look at it in retrospect, right? We watch the news. We listen to the news. We read the news, right? And how many such incidents we come across? And how many such incidents we give place to in our minds and our hearts? I ask you, reading the paper, reading that news or listening to the news, you are earning reward or you're earning guna, I ask you. Because you're believing it, you hear that, then you believe it. Or this person here, he did this. Because you've got no witnesses to it. Either there is self-confession or there is witnesses to it. And when there isn't confession or witnesses to it, and you believe that news, then you are already a gunagar. You are already part of the ghibat. Because the people is passing on the ghibat to you, backbiting to you, accepting it. You're part of the gossip. Aren't you a part of the gossip? You are definitely part of the gossip. The paper is reading it to you, the television is reading it to you, or the radio is reading it to you, and you're accepting it, or the internet is reading it to you, and you're accepting it. When you're accepting it, then you're part of this whole story. You're either in the false allegation, you're either in the gossip, or you're either in the ghibat. But now, you see a pure Islamic community, how it lives. You're not even allowed to believe this news. No, I don't want this news to come to my home at all. Don't even talk about this. It's people's way. They don't verify information. No information is verified. I heard it, one person heard it, then he must go and tell the second person, and the second person then he broadcasts it. So they say, India, now we don't know about South Africa, but they say in India, you know, if you want any news to be broadcast, publicized, then you must say it to two people. One is the barber, and the second is the woman, you know. But with this message also, that you mustn't say anybody. So it'll go around the whole world with this message. Don't say anybody, eh? Only for you this. Only for your ear, for your ears. You say it to the barber or you say it to the woman. And they will see, they'll ensure the whole world knows about it. And they'll go with the same message that you mustn't say anybody about it. See? So, you see this information, dissemination of information, and how thorough Islam is, that you don't even believe in it. Forget bringing it to your lips. Forget bringing it to your tongue. You don't even talk about it. You don't even believe in it. That's the purity of Islamic social etiquette. When I say it's purity of the social etiquette, you consider yourself to be in that position, right? Yourself or your daughter or your wife. And people are slandering. Do you appreciate that? So exactly the same, if it's in the papers, papers are spewing it, right? Then that person also, it's his integrity, it's his respect. Like you feel, they also feel. Are you the only person that has feeling? Are you the only person that has feeling and hurt? He also has feelings. So like you need to be respected, he needs to be respected. You have an integrity, he has an integrity. You have got a respect, he's got a respect. Like you need to be respected, he needs to be respected as well. What do you feel? The respect only belongs to you. So you see what's supposed to be the response. لا تقف ما ليس لك به. What you are not sure about, don't you ever pursue it, don't even go behind that which you don't have proper knowledge. Now here, you've seen the thing yourself, but you can't even speak about it. You've seen it yourself, you can't even speak about it, you can't even believe in it. Listen to say, no, I don't believe my eyes, finished. The chapter is closed, I don't believe in it. Maybe I've seen wrong, I didn't see right, perhaps some of my eyes may have been blurred. Maybe it was the wrong person. So you'll give yourself 100 explanations to say, no, this person is innocent. Because you didn't have the required amount of witnesses. So you'll just shut it off. You can't even speak about it. You can't even believe it. You can't entertain it. Because even if you're entertaining it, أُولَٰئِكَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ هُمُ الْكَاذِبُونَ, in the sight of Allah Ta'ala, you'll be counted as a liar. Imagine on the day of Qiyamah, Allah calls you, or so-and-so, liar, come here. So-and-so, liar, you come up. Will you appreciate that? You're not going to appreciate that. No. I don't want to be called a liar by Allah Ta'ala. Allah is saying, I'll call you a liar. فَوْلَٰئِكَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ هُمُ الْكَاذِبُونَ. In my sight, you are a liar. Here amongst people, outside the masjid, someone says, you're a liar, in front of everybody. In the Jummah khutbah, someone says, you're a liar. Ji? Whereas it's a small crowd, 300, 400 people. And in their presence, you feel so embarrassed. Perhaps you will leave going out to that masjid. If they call you a liar, right? Here, in front of the whole mahshar, all the people that have congregated on the day of Qiyamah, and Allah is saying, this is a liar. Imagine the disgrace and embarrassment. So you see, securing and preserving respect, integrity. What level is Islam even up to? You don't even forget talking about it, you don't even believe in it. I didn't hear this. I don't know about it. Finish. I'm just cancelling it off my memory completely. It's off. Generally, the lie, the sin that is connected to the tongue, we consider it very insignificant. Other sins, we consider it as serious. You know, perhaps zina, or murder or some stealing or riba, we consider it as a serious thing, right? But the sins and the flaws of the tongue we consider as very simple, insignificant, nothing. As though it was a fly sitting in the nose, you just changed it. Whereas in Tirmizi there is a hadith, a man utters a word, right? He utters a word and he doesn't consider it to be a serious thing. But it's so pleasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that it takes him to the heights of the heights. Because he brought some type of reconciliation. It was a problem that was going on. But he thought about the situation. And he felt, no, let me just bring some goodness. Let me bring some goodness. And that he just promotes him to the highest of the high. Perhaps in that whole equation, he had to give in to his own nafs. Some of his integrity, he had to swallow some of his self-respect. He had to give in his own respect. But he said, no, in this, I'll bring about some betterment. There'll be a better relationship. For that, what Allah Pak is promising, that I will promote you to the heights. Such an easy amal. Just swallow that pride of yours. Swallow that arrogance of yours. And bring about some type of reconciliation, some type of bitterness amongst community, just through the preserving of the tongue. And Allah Pak is promoting. Allah Pak tawfiq is